Well, good morning, TNC family. From my home to wherever you are. And let me just start by saying, I hope you're enjoying and loving as much as I am reading daily through the fifth book of the New Testament, the Acts of the Apostles, as we are all doing together as a church family. Because entering their story and feeling what they're feeling and wrestling with what they're wrestling with is giving such great perspective, wisdom, and confidence as we face what we are facing in our era. And I mentioned last week that the main character in Acts is Paul. In fact, I gave him a huge shout out and highlighted his curriculum vitae and said quite accurately that Paul, still today, is seen as the most significant person in the history of the early church. In fact, no person in the entire first century world was more responsible for merging the Jewish worldview together with the Christian worldview and starting churches across the entire Roman Empire and defending the gospel against poor theology and misguided practical living. But, now listen, because this is important, it wasn't inevitable. He wasn't a marionette on God's string. His life was not the product of a downloaded computer program installed by the great cosmic programmer. Instead, it happened because Paul had an undeniable breakthrough experience one day on the road to Damascus. Because it still was not inevitable, and because he chose to respond to it. And so I want to explore with you now his Damascus Road story, and then by extension, your story and my story. And here's the one main question for us today. What are you doing with the light? What are you doing with your light? What are you doing with the light that you have been given? So here we go, Acts chapter 9 and verse 1. Saul, because before he was Paul, he was called Saul, same guy. He would change names from his Hebrew name to a more Greek-sounding name when he took his message to the greater Gentile world. Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's followers. So he went to the high priest and he requested letters addressed to the synagogues in Damascus, asking for their cooperation in the arrest of any followers of Jesus he found there. He wanted to bring them, both men and women, back to Jerusalem in chains. Verse 3. So he set off, and when he got to the outskirts of Damascus, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him, and he fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" "Who are you?" Saul asked. "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting," he replied. "Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." Verse 7, the men traveling with Saul stood there speechless, for they heard the sound of someone's voice, but saw no one. Verse 8, Saul picked himself up off the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he was blind. So his companions led him by the hand to Damascus. Verse 9, he remained there blind for 3 days and did not eat or drink. Now, I'm guessing you may have heard this story before, because over the years, the Damascus Road experience has become a cultural metaphor, a phrase used in our broader culture to describe someone who has had an epiphany, a life-changing experience, a revelation. You know, someone who has seen the light and will never be the same. And everyone's I've seen the light experience comes in a variety of forms, a variety of voices and situations and settings. It comes on mountaintops and in valleys, in labor and delivery rooms and by gravesides, during graduation marches and job promotions, and in failures and the loss of employment. Truth is, it can happen at wedding altars and divorce courts, in a classroom or a church service, or in the opening chapters of a book. Sometimes it comes in a moment of adventure when we travel somewhere and discover something. Sometimes it comes with like a surprise encounter, or in the middle of a road trip, or along the edge of an ocean, or in the quiet solitude of a morning meditation. Sometimes the light comes with a diagnosis or an overdose or a traffic ticket. And I would argue, without much opposition, I would guess, that sometimes the light comes when an event changes our reality. Like COVID-19, when we have the opportunity to re-examine the way we live and what we valued and what we've taken for granted. But here's the question. When the light comes, what will you do with the light? And this is a hugely important question, friends, because some people get this right and find a joy and a purpose they could have never imagined. But other people get this wrong and get mired in unhappy and unproductive living for decades or more. So I want to offer now four suggestions in the form of questions that can really help us as we consider what to do with the light. And number one is this. Will you experience the light? And this is about not rushing through it, but rather soaking in the experience, which, full disclosure, is something I struggle with, because I would always rather analyze it, break it down into its component parts, quantify it, come up with the three action steps that flow from it, when the first thing that is needed is to fully experience it. In fact, analyzing it too much or too soon or in the wrong way can actually backfire and give you the least important information. You may know that over the years, Saul's Damascus Road experience has generated all kinds of debate and theories as to what actually happened. Did Saul, Paul, have multiple personalities? Was this a haunting from Stephen, whom Saul had murdered days before? Was this a mental breakdown after years of high-strung theological thinking and living? Was this an epileptic fit? Or maybe he was just dehydrated in the midday sun? And on and on. And these are fair questions. But I just think it's also important to remember, especially when we get bogged down in this kind of evaluation, it's important to remember that nobody who has actually had this kind of experience is likely to give a scientific explanation of that experience. I'm saying the experiences mean what they mean for the person experiencing them, and they mean what they mean for the real world. For example, I'll always remember the early summer of 1990, standing at the border between East and West Berlin and holding a hammer and chipping away pieces of the historic Berlin Wall. A wall that represented fear and danger and hate and a refusal to share basic human rights and freedoms. And I remember I was chipping away at the wall, and I remember having this sense that I was part of something larger, a part of history, a part of symbolizing the tearing down of walls. It was like something said to me in that moment, just keep doing this your whole life. And you can analyze that all you want. No, David, you were simply experiencing the product of your previous history classes combined with your brain being exposed to new stimuli in a foreign country while simultaneously getting caught up in the emotional fervor of a moment in history. So whatever greater experience you thought you were having, David, it wasn't real. It was simply a product of several historical, biological, and chemical responses. And you can say that if you want, but I'm just saying that the experience meant what it meant for me, and it was more than that. And further, what I'm saying is maybe the best thing we can do with this Damascus Road story is just read the text and know that Paul has a genuine spiritual experience where he experiences goodness and glory and an encounter with a living God. And in the same way, maybe the best thing you can do with your light is just to experience it and to soak it in and tell about it and maybe journal about it and celebrate it if it should be celebrated and grieve it if it's something to grieve and to do all that before you analyze it. I love what author and Franciscan priest Richard Rohr writes. Quote, "The real art to a spiritual vision of life is the discipline to simply let the experiences be the experiences and to hold off on the rush to figure out what happened and where it fits." And I love that because the moment that you try to analyze an experience and name it and figure out what it is, you're no longer in that experience. You're after it. You're standing outside of it. And that's a place that we have to get to, but I'm just saying we probably should not try to get there too fast. What should you do with your light? Number one, experience it. Number two, second question is this. Will you learn from the light? Will you learn from the light? Now, this, of course, will require humility because you cannot grow and expand if you simply double down on whatever it is we have already believed. And we should not take for granted Paul's thoughtful humility here as he wrestles with his Damascus Road experience. Think about it. Paul was a brilliant Jewish scholar. And he was climbing the ranks in the Jewish community. And he had everything to lose by humbly rethinking and reevaluating his beliefs and his vocation. His community would call him a heretic. His family would start by quietly admonishing him, but then they would like start a prayer chain. Will you pray for Paul? He's got some new crazy ideas that don't go along with what we believe. And of course, it would come for Paul with many economic and physical risks too. But oh my word, thank God, Paul was humble and was willing to reevaluate his ideas and beliefs. This is huge, friends, because so many of us resist new information. It's just not comfortable. And besides, I already know what I believe, and I don't need anyone to challenge it. I've shared with some of you before from the book called The Death of Expertise by Tom Nichols, professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College. And in his book, he tells the story of one day when he was lecturing at Harvard University. And after the lecture, a student came up and they entered a conversation about strategic military affairs. And at some point in the conversation, the student says, "Well, your guess is as good as mine." To which Nichols responded, "Actually, your guess is not as good as mine." And in the book, Nichols shows how across many fields of expertise, science, law, medicine, politics, military affairs, people dismiss expertise, and they do so with frequency and with passion. But the truth is, and he shows this, experts are more often right than wrong. And yet, people constantly search for the loopholes in expert knowledge that will allow them to disregard the expert advice they don't like. And I have to tell you, I see this in our world today. And it comes from an unwillingness to be humble and to admit when we're wrong or got something only partly right. And it comes from a throne of pride rather than a seat of humility. And I love that Paul does not dismiss his new information, his new light, his new experience, but he seeks to humbly learn from it. Friends, read the text. He actually goes to Arabia for 3 years after this experience to reread the scriptures and rediscuss them and process and wrestle with it and learn from it before he launches out into the next era of his life and teaching. And it encourages us to do the same with our light. Whenever we experience something that challenges our status quo, that takes us to new places of joy or grief, possibility or confusion, we have to ask, what can I learn from this new experience? What can I learn from this light? And that's the second question. Will we humbly learn from the light? Which leads to the third question. Number three. Will you move on what you learn? Because sometimes we know what we've learned. We know what we need to do. But we do the wrong things. Last week, I watched the NFL draft live, where professional football teams draft players from the college ranks, and I heard, while watching over and over and over, I heard throughout the days of the draft, this phrase, value pick. It was a value pick. And it reminded me, when I heard it, of something that sports talk radio host Colin Cowherd writes in his book, which is about the tension between value and need. In other words, he says, you've analyzed your situation, you've learned what you need, but you don't act on what you need. Instead, you go with the value pick. And to make the point of how silly this thinking is, he uses an analogy. He writes, quote, the next time your wife, and you can actually fill in any name you want here, your spouse, your child, your grandparent, your friend, he writes, the next time your wife asks you to run a few errands, change it up a little, ad lib, improvise, think outside the box. When you're asked to pick up milk, eggs, and bread, stop by Home Depot instead and grab a garden hose. Buy a rake on your way out, even though you've got a good one at home and no use for an extra one. Stop at the grocery store and buy some olives and licorice. He writes, the idea is seek value over need. Obviously, he writes, this could create some tension at home. She's going to wonder what you were thinking and how she's going to make dinner with a rake and a garden hose. But here's your response. Wait a minute, you will say in your best lecturing tone. Let me explain how much value we got in return. He writes, then tell her you found a coupon for the garden hose and the olives were buy one, get one free and the licorice was 60% off and the rake, oh yeah, honey, they were practically giving it away. Value. That's your key word to use. And how does that relate to the NFL draft? He writes, easy. It's the exact same brand of nonsense NFL teams give their fans every draft. Value. Your team's secondary regularly gets torched, but instead of drafting the best cornerback, it decides to grab a backup quarterback instead. Why? Because he was a value pick. In other words, he was just too talented to pass up, even though the team already had a star quarterback. I love this example, friends. And actually, this year, are there any Green Bay Packer fans listening? Hey, Steve and Shelley, here's your rake. Now, TNC family, here's my point. Sometimes we move on the wrong things. We have an experience and we learn from it, but we don't move on what we need to move on. Instead, we move on what feels like the value move. Hey, thanks, doctor. This has been a real wake-up call. I think I'll reduce my intake of daily Oreos from 5 to 4 and move from the mega stuffed ones to the double stuff. Thanks, counselor. I do know what I need to give up, and I know I need to give up this habit altogether. But I think I'll just try to do it in moderation. Thanks, financial advisor. Wow, I see clearly. I need to radically change my financial habits after I buy those amazing shoes because they're on sale. What a value. So it turns out like this. The need is for me to be sold out to something, but I'll only dip my toe in. The need is for me to humbly seek total forgiveness, but I'll just give a half-hearted apology. The need is for me to show up and join in and be a full team member, but I'll hedge my bets and hold back a little. Thank goodness Paul didn't take the value move. Maybe next weekend when I'm in Jerusalem, I'll consider sharing part of this new insight with my Sunday school class. That was an inspirational experience on the Damascus Road. I think I'm going to make a $25 donation to the local Damascus Road pothole repair ministry. No, friends, Paul doesn't make the value pick. He moves on the need. And if you read Acts, he does it all the time. He always makes the move that's needed, even when he knows that it will require stepping out of his comfort zone and being judged and misunderstood and marginalized, and even when it will lead to places of confusion. Because sometimes he actually finds himself in the middle of some really confusing and hard situations, some really dark places, some really long stretches when the light feels pretty dim. Which leads me to the fourth question today. Will you embrace the moments when the light is far less obvious than maybe it once was? Because sometimes you are walking in the dark, and all you can see is a little sliver of the moonlight, barely enough light to even take a step. You know, one time Paul is writing to the church at Corinth, and he says, chapter 13, verse 12, Now we see but a poor reflection. Now we have confusion and misunderstanding and doubts and questions. Then, he writes, we'll see face to face. But now, I only know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. What? Hello, Damascus Road Light Paul? What do you mean now you only see but a poor reflection? Because most of life, friends, is not lived on the Damascus Road, at sunrise or at high noon. Much of life is actually lived at sunset. And sometimes it's post-sunset, it's dark. And some of you listening now are probably like, yeah, that's me. In fact, I can't remember the last time I've seen any light, much less Damascus Road kind of light. And if that's you, then I just want to say, first of all, I'm so sorry. And I hope you have a community of people you can lean on and learn from and be loved by. And I hope and pray that TNC will always be this kind of community. But let me also say, in the words of Barbara Brown Taylor's great book, that it really is possible to learn to walk in the dark. And it's okay when you can't see two steps in front of you. It's okay to just take one step. I was talking on the phone a few days ago to a friend, and we talked about many things, including the challenges of this virus and the challenges of finances and isolation and fear and so on. And this person brought up a book by Anne Lamott that I had mentioned in a teaching 3 years ago, and how a story from the book was still a source of encouragement to this day. And the book was Anne Lamott's book, bird by bird. Bird by bird, where Lamott writes about growing up with her older brother, who was 10 years old at the time, and he was trying to get a report written for school on birds that he'd had 3 months to write, but which was due the next day. She writes, "We were out at our family cabin in Bolinas, and my brother was at the kitchen table close to tears, surrounded by binder paper and pencils and unopened books about birds, immobilized by the hugeness of the task ahead. But then my father sat down beside him, put his arm around my brother's shoulder and said, 'Bird by bird, buddy. Just take it bird by bird. Start out with chickadees and then move on to pelicans. And little by little by little, bird by bird, something will kind of use you to get itself written.'" And I love that story because I love it because when you tell a child to go clean her room and you walk her upstairs and she sees the entire mess and she says, "I can't," then you can just say, "Yes, you can. Bird by bird, toy by toy, sock by sock. Yes, you can. Yes, you can build muscle, curl by curl, sit up by sit up. Yes, you can lose weight, pound by pound. Yes, you can save money, dollar by dollar. Yes, you can deal with the grief of that loss, day by day, sometimes just hour by hour. Yes, you can learn to play that instrument or hit that baseball, note by note, pitch by pitch, bird by bird." And then all of a sudden, you look up, and in this process of bird by bird, you find out that you're someplace beautiful. Lamott says elsewhere that she has learned in life that living well is like driving at night with the headlights on. You can only see a little ways in front of you, but you can make a whole journey that way. And I love that metaphor because so often I want to know where I'm going to end up and what I'll see along the way and how I'll feel at each stage and when I'll get to my destination. But you know, mostly life just doesn't work that way. And I really do believe that the story of Paul teaches us that sometimes it will be blindingly obvious. Yes, sometimes it will be obvious, but other times it'll be through a glass, darkly. And when it's through a glass, darkly, that's okay too. Because if you keep walking in the moments where the light is far from obvious, if you keep walking in the darkness, you can be sure that there will be a sunrise. So, what are you doing with your light? Because Paul had an experience one day with the light. But it wasn't only the light that changed him. It was what he did when he responded to the light. And for you and for me, most often there's nothing we can do to orchestrate the light. But we can always decide how we will respond to the light. I pray we will experience it, learn from it, move on it, and embrace even the slivers as we walk together toward the sunrise.